Welcome back to Esther, everyone. Chapter 5 today, and the kids remain cross-legged on the floor with rapt attention as Grandpa continues the story for our Purim celebration, and the moment of truth arrives for our beloved Esther. Now, I hope you don't mind my little embellishment of the kids and Grandpa here. For one, I happen to be a granddad, and I love telling a good story. But more importantly, I want you to enter this story the way a child does, to be challenged by it and ask good questions. But I also want you to look at it through mature eyes. Esther is a grown woman facing a dire situation with complex faith decisions. Will she trust God? Or is God even part of her story? He hasn't spoken. Back on the floor with the kids, two of your little cousins overheard our questions about where God is, and they've started arguing. One cousin sees God lots of places. Her big brother disagrees, doesn't see God here anywhere. Grandpa just raises an eyebrow. Sorry, Grandpa, I'll keep him quiet. Story is about to start again. Verse 1. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace, in front of the king's hall. The king was sitting on his royal throne in the hall, facing the entrance. This is it, her big moment, and Esther stands boldly. Just look at the scene. The king's hall, the most powerful room in the whole empire. And there on the royal throne sits King Xerxes. Can you see it all? Can you feel the weight of this moment? And there stands the queen in all her regality, beautiful and bold in her royal robes. And every breath in the room stops short because they know the law. No one enters without invitation. No one. And this king has deposed of queens before. What will he do? Verse 2. When he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out to her the gold scepter that was in his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. Okay, we can breathe. Your cousins breathe out loudly. Sister insists that was a God moment. See, I told you God would show up. He's helping Esther. Brother's not convinced. She just got lucky. Luck is easy when you're beautiful. Grandpa raises the other eyebrow. Verse 3. Then the king asked, "What is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be given you." That's the first time in our story that he calls her Queen Esther. She has the room. Now that half the kingdom offer isn't literal. It's an old saying that basically means, I'm feeling generous. Looks like this is Esther's opportunity. If you have a hype song, time to cue it up. Rocky theme, lose yourself. This is your moment, girl. You only got one shot. Verse 4. If it pleases the king, replied Esther, let the king, together with Haman, come today to a banquet I have prepared for him. All right, cut the hype song. Maybe that wasn't her moment. So why the delay? She clearly has a plan, because she already prepared a banquet. Maybe it's not the right timing. Sister says it's not God's timing. This time, Grandpa raises both eyebrows. Verse 5. Bring Haman at once, the king said, so that we may do what Esther asks. So the king and Haman went to the banquet Esther had prepared. As they were drinking wine, the king again asked Esther, "Now, what is your petition? It will be given you. And what is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be granted." Now this has to be it. She's got the king drinking and feeling good. He knows she has a request. Time to go for it, girl. Shoot your shot. Verse 7. Esther replied, "My petition and my request is this. If the king regards me with favor, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet I will prepare for them. Then I will answer the king's question." Wow, she's either procrastinating, being coy, or playing the long game. It's hard to say which. Sister chimes in again that it isn't God's timing. Brother rolls his eyes. Funny how some people see God in every little thing, even when the text doesn't say it. Now watch this. Verse 9. Haman went out that day happy and in high spirits. But when he saw Mordecai at the king's gate and observed that he neither rose nor showed fear in his presence, he was filled with rage against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. Calling together his friends and Zeresh, his wife, Haman boasted to them about his vast wealth, his many sons, and all the ways the king had honored him, and how he had elevated him above the other nobles and officials. And that's not all, Haman added. I'm the only person Queen Esther invited to accompany the king to the banquet she gave, and she has invited me along with the king tomorrow. But all this gives me no satisfaction as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting at the king's gate. Now there's a sorry state of a man. Haman is nearly the most powerful man in the world, and he loves it, loves to brag about it. He loves the privilege and honor of it. But watch his words. All this gives him no satisfaction. Why? There's a lesson here. When all of your joy and contentment can be taken from you, you're building on sand. Mordecai poked the great idol that Haman worships, and the idol proved hollow. Haman's idol is his ego. But Haman's friends offer a plan to keep that idol from crumbling. Verse 14. His wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Have a pole set up, reaching to a height of 50 cubits, and ask the king in the morning to have Mordecai impaled on it. Then go with the king to the banquet and enjoy yourself." This suggestion delighted Haman, and he had the pole set up. Wow, forget Haman's ego. We have bigger problems to solve. Haman's guard is in the process of setting up a 75-foot pole with one purpose, impale Mordecai. The language here describes either hanging or impaling. Either method is certain death. So much for Esther's long game. Mordecai will be dead in the morning, before the banquet. Back at Grandpa's feet, Brother feels vindicated. Where's your God timing now? If God is in this, why is it going from bad to worse? And why doesn't God just tell Esther what to do? Okay, so Brother is annoying, but his questions are valid. You know you've asked them. If God is in this, why is it getting worse? And if this is my destiny, why doesn't he tell me what to do? Sister is unfazed. Some people just can't stop seeing God in their story. And when you think about it, doesn't this story remind you of something? Haven't we been here before? Listening to Esther's story, you can't help but hear the echoes of two of the Bible's greatest heroes. Joseph was exiled from home, only to become a great leader in a foreign land. And when his own people were facing certain death, Joseph saved them all, thanks to his high position. Later, Moses was born into a foreign kingdom and grew up in the royal family, until he too found opportunity to save his people from oppression. In both cases, a great decision was faced. Should they reveal their identity as one of God's people? Each one found that God had placed them in their royal position for such a time as this. So why does God keep retelling this story? It's not the same story. It's fresh and new, and the stakes are very real. Sorry, Mordecai. Bad word choice. The danger is real. But these themes have been woven through the fabric of the Bible for centuries. What is God doing? He's foreshadowing. He wants us to sense something coming, to be ready for it. C.S. Lewis wrote the Chronicles of Narnia for his young godchild, and he created the lion Aslan as a picture of Jesus in another realm. J.R.R. Tolkien was more subtle. The Lord of the Rings has many Christ characters, each one reflecting different aspects of Jesus in different ways. A prophesied king in exile, a demon battler with supernatural powers, and a humble sin-bearing savior. The Old Testament works in a similar way. Many characters are pre-echoes of Christ. Esther has a choice, save herself or save the people. To save the people, she'll have to identify as one of them. Mordecai also risks his life, refuses to bow down to the evil one. Remember when Jesus refused to bow to Satan? Here in chapter 5, guess which day Esther rose from her fast to stand before the king? It was the third day. Remind you of someone rising the third day? And Mordecai is now sentenced to be lifted high and put to death, though he committed no crime. Or maybe you think those connections are stretching too far. That's part of the fun here. It isn't obvious, just like God's work in all this isn't obvious. If he isn't here, let's hope he shows up soon, before the stakes get higher. So much hangs in the balance. Oh, sorry, Mordecai. Poor word choice. Did it again. My bad.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.